In the sterile halls of an Oregon psychiatric hospital, a perfectly calibrated machine runs under Nurse Ratchett's meticulous control. Her starched uniform, rigid posture, and calculating smile embody the mechanical precision she demands. The ward hums with perpetual muzak playing through hidden speakers, while the clock runs at deliberately altered speeds, all designed to keep patients docile and compliant. Through the eyes of our narrator, Chief Bromden, a half-Native American patient feigning deaf-muteness, we see beyond the antiseptic facade to what he calls the Combine, a vast mechanized conspiracy processing humans into conformity. The fluorescent lights buzz constantly, the floors gleam with unnatural shine, and the air feels sanitized of human warmth. Nurse Ratchett's most insidious tool is the group therapy session, which she transforms into what newcomer McMurphy accurately labels a peckin' party. During these orchestrated meetings, patients are manipulated into attacking each other's vulnerabilities while staff clinically document each emotional wound. When patient Pete Boncini briefly rebels, crying out that he's born dead, the response is swift. He's efficiently sedated, becoming like an old clock that won't tell time but won't stop neither. In this carefully constructed environment, patients have surrendered their humanity, becoming what intellectual patient Harding describes as rabbits, too afraid to challenge the wolf that rules them. The ward exists in perpetual fog, both literal in the chief's hallucinations and metaphorical in the patient's chemically dulled consciousness. Into this sterile world storms Randall Patrick McMurphy, a boisterous, red-headed gambler transferred from a prison work farm wearing work boots and a tilted motorcycle cap. His first laugh, free and loud, hasn't been heard on the ward for years. Unlike the others who've internalized their supposed illnesses, McMurphy openly admits he's faking insanity to escape prison labor. He immediately identifies Nurse Ratchett as his enemy, telling Harding, "That nurse ain't some kind of monster chicken, buddy. What she is a ball cutter." His street-smart instincts recognizes the truth. Her power comes from psychologically emasculating the men, making them doubt their manhood and self-worth. McMurphy's rebellion begins with small acts, organizing card games, mocking attendance, questioning rules, before betting he can get the best of that woman within a week. His first major confrontation occurs over watching the World Series when Ratchett refuses to change the schedule. In a pivotal moment that becomes ward legend, McMurphy attempts to lift a massive control panel, betting he can throw it through the window to escape. Though he fails, his effort, "But I tried though," awakens something in the chief and the other patients. Chief Bromden's perspective offers the novel's most profound insights. Having retreated into feigned deaf-muteness after years of being ignored, he observes the ward through paranoid hallucinations, believing the hospital contains a vast machine room where staff commit horrible crimes at night. The chief's awakening begins when McMurphy catches him hiding gum and offers him more instead of reporting him. This kindness prompts the chief to speak for the first time in years, his voice rusty from disuse. When he tries to laugh, it sounds like crying, marking the beginning of his reconnection with his authentic self. Through late-night conversations, the chief reveals how his once powerful father was broken by white society and the government coveting their tribal lands. As a child, white officials ignored his perfect English, treating him as invisible, teaching him that people's machinery disposes of words like they weren't even spoken when they don't fit expectations. McMurphy offers a deal. If the chief promises to become big again, McMurphy will help restore him. As the fog in his mind clears, the chief realizes his diminished self wasn't inevitable, but a response to oppression. The fishing trip marks a pivotal moment, a brief escape allowing patients to rediscover their authentic selves. When transportation problems threaten the excursion, McMurphy convinces Dr. Spivey to join by having his prostitute friend Candy flirt with the doctor. Initially uncomfortable outside the hospital, the patients feel exposed in their green uniforms. At a gas station, they face hostility until McMurphy boldly declares them dangerous criminals with himself as a murderer. This performance flips the power dynamic, prompting Harding's realization that mental illness could have the aspect of power. On the ocean, the men experience transformation. Germophobic George Sorensen emerges as an experienced boat captain, while Billy Bibbit gains confidence through Candy's attention. When they discover a school of fish, chaos erupts into unbridled joy. McMurphy's laughter becomes the emotional core. He laughs at the girl, at us, at the captain back at the pier, at everything, because he knows you have to laugh at the things that hurt you just to keep yourself in balance. This laughter spreads outward, creating waves that crashed on beaches all over the coast, wave after wave after wave. After the fishing trip, Nurse Ratched undermines McMurphy by exposing his profit motives to the patients, revealing how he's been exploiting them financially and casting doubt on his genuine concern. The conflict escalates when McMurphy defends George during a mandatory shower when attendants harass him about his cleanliness phobia. Despite having recently decided to stop fighting the system, McMurphy intervenes. The resulting brawl sends both McMurphy and the chief to the disturbed ward for electroshock therapy. Each treatment visibly weakens McMurphy. Though he maintains his rebellious demeanor, the chief notices his deterioration. His face drained of color, showing the fear I'd seen reflected in the windshield on our coast trip. The final tragedy occurs when Nurse Ratched discovers Billy Bibbit after his night with Candy. She methodically destroys his newfound confidence by threatening to tell his mother. Billy's stutter returns violently before he slashes his throat with surgical instruments. Nurse Ratched blames McMurphy, triggering his final act, attacking and attempting to strangle her. The chief understands McMurphy acts not from personal rage, but collective necessity. We couldn't stop him because we were the ones making him do it. Following his confrontation with Nurse Ratched, McMurphy returns lobotomized, his body intact but his essence gone, his face too blank, his eyes like smudged fuses in a fuse box. Yet McMurphy's defeat catalyzes revolution. Patients begin asserting autonomy, signing releases, requesting transfers, finding courage. Harding prepares to face the outside world. Even Ratched's power wanes as her damaged throat forces her to communicate through written notes. The chief performs a final mercy by smothering McMurphy, sparing him from becoming a cautionary example. He then accomplishes what McMurphy couldn't, lifting the control panel and hurling it through the window, proving McMurphy's influence transcended his physical defeat. The novel ends with the chief hitchhiking toward Canada to find tribe members who haven't drunk themselves goofy since the government tried to buy their right to be Indians. Kesey's masterpiece shows our strongest weapon against dehumanization isn't violence, but authenticity. When systems demand we sacrifice humanity for order, the most revolutionary act may be to laugh freely, connect genuinely, and remain defiantly human despite our brokenness.